Bob Etheridge stepped on campus in the fall of 1961 to play basketball and pursue his degree in business administration. He joined the Fighting Camels when they were just starting competition as a four-year program. A Campbell has grown exponentially over the last six-plus decades. Bob Etheridge's travels have taken him all over the state and to Washington, D.C., where he served 14 years in the U.S. House of Representatives. A native of Johnston County, Congressman Etheridge and his wife, Faye, have for the last 50 years made their home in Harnett County, where he's been a businessman, part-time farmer, and full-time public servant. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is our next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with people who have made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by Congressman and Campbell Hall of Fame member Bob Etheridge. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Bob.
Stan, thank you, and I'm honored to be with you. I really am.
Well, Bob, let's just start at the beginning. How did all this get started?
Well, it's, you know, the truth is I was one of five kids. We grew up on a little small tobacco farm down in Johnston County. And sheesh, I never had any plans. Like a lot of kids, you know, you're going day to day doing what your parents want to do. And I hadn't planned to go to school. And when I got out of high school, I played baseball and basketball. We didn't have a football team. And baseball was my preference over basketball. But I got taller, and actually after I got out of high school, I grew 2 inches out of high school, so I was taller than I was in high school. And I was really going to NC State on ag engineering. And of course, I had taken the entrance test. I'd worked 2 years out of high school before I decided to go to college. That helped me understand very quickly I needed to get an education. So I worked in the summer measuring land with the old FSA, ACS, ASCS program of measuring land for the federal government. Saved enough money to pay my first semester, really, tuition here at Campbell. And every afternoon I enjoyed basketball, and we'd go practice in the old Carter Gym. And we were playing with the basketball team. They'd come out and they could work out before the season started. Well, at that time when Coach McCall was coaching, he'd let students come and work out with the team if they wanted to. So I did. We'd play, and pretty soon, the first week, he'd say, anybody can come work out with him. He was looking for a few more players, knew he would cut all of us anyway. Well, at the end of the first week, two of us were still there. In the next week, I was the only one left, so he let me stick around. And as the season started, I wound up getting a uniform, no money. End of the first semester, I told him, I said, you know, Coach, I need some funds. I didn't have a lot of money because my parents couldn't help me. So he gave me a scholarship as a day student. I was a day student, didn't live on campus. And the end of my first year, he awarded me a full scholarship. And, you know, the truth is that's something that really changed my life. Because I had a chance to go to college. And in those days, we were in the NAIA before we went to Division I. And you were allowed to do some work, and I'd work a little on the weekend, save my money to have some spending money. And spent the rest of my career here. And as a result of that, I met my current wife, or in those days, my future wife. And we've been married now roughly over 50 years and have three wonderful children who've really done well. So Campbell had a way of, literally, today they change a lot of lives, but they sure made a difference in ours.
How did you and Faye meet?
Well, it was interesting, and it's true. I tell the story many times. When you practice in basketball in those days, and it's probably still true today, you show up in the gym at 3:30, you practice till right at close to 6, and you're the last ones to have dinner. As we came in, I remember seeing her standing across the Marshbanks cafeteria, and I could still see her. She was wearing what they used to call a yellow slingshot dress. That's what they called them then. And I saw her, and I said, you know, I'm going to approach that lady. I want to have a date. First time I asked for a date, she turned me down. And at that point, you know, I would have been a junior. I was a senior, I guess, on the basketball, co-captain of the basketball team. I was, you know, big stuff on campus at that time. And she had something at home, and she let me know. And I thought, well, I'm not going to give up. I'll try again. And I did. And the rest is history. But, you know, it gave me a chance, Stan, to, you know, as a kid growing up in Johnston County on a farm, we hadn't traveled anywhere hardly at all. You know, we didn't go to, as a basketball player, you get to go to other schools. I remember the first tournament we went to was in New Bedford, Massachusetts, in the Holiday Tournament. That was big stuff. Of course, in those days, you know, it was different for universities. We had the old bus, and we stopped in Rocky Mount and picked up the basketball team that rode in the same bus with us to the same tournament. It was Atlantic Christian then, and now Barton College. We went up, played in the tournament, beat them in the championship game, and brought them back home.
Bob, tell me a little bit about Coach Fred McCall. I mean, you know, he started the basketball camp. He's a legendary figure, North Carolina Spartans Hall of Fame member. What was it like to play for Coach?
He was tough. He was a competitor, and he was an outstanding coach. He really was ahead of his time. In terms of being a visionary. I mean, the fact that he started the first basketball camp, and he brought to this campus some of the most outstanding coaches in America. Press Maravich, Dolph Shays, Bob Cousy, who was playing years ago, most folks wouldn't recognize that, John Wooden. I mean, no coach has accomplished today in all these years, what John Wooden did. And John Wooden would come and put on his shorts and go out in those gyms. And it was then there were no air-conditioned gyms. They were all hot. And, of course, in the evenings, Coach McCall set it up where all the counselors, the Campbell basketball team people, Lynn Chapel, who was an All-American at Wake Forest, Dolph Shays, Perry Holland, who played at Davidson, and other players, we'd have a basketball game for the student athletes who were there at the camp. And we just had a wonderful time. Fred McCall was a visionary, but he had a terrific mind. I don't think he ever met anybody he didn't know. And if he met you one time, he'd remember your name. So... his practices were tough. Now, he really was a tough coach, but he had a deep caring. I mean, I can't say enough nice things about him, because had it not been for him, I might have gotten an education. I would not have gotten one and left school without having a debt, because he saw in me an opportunity to help someone. And the fact that he said, I'm going to give you a scholarship. You know, scholarships are worth a lot. You know, to give a youngster a scholarship, he hadn't been out and scouted me. I don't know anyone on the team had. I just show up at the gym. And, you know, one thing led to another, and ultimately I had a chance to meet some wonderful people here, and wound up co-captain of the team my senior year. And Fred McCall had a lot to do with that.
At least two of your former teammates, Sam Bishop and Pete Wish, are fellow Hall of Fame members. Tell us a little bit about those.
And Mike Reedy, I think Mike as well. Mike's passed away. Pete was a terrific athlete, but he was focused, good guy. He still lives in Fayetteville. And Sam worked for a firm in New Jersey when he left here. Sam not only played basketball, he was a center on the team, an excellent center, but he also was a pretty darn good baseball pitcher. He did. He was terrific. I mean, Campbell has had a track record of having excellent athletes. The baseball team has probably sent more athletes to the professional ranks than basketball or golf or anything else. But Campbell has a rich history of not only having good athletes, but having a great academic program and giving young men and women a chance.
You mentioned Coach McCall. Who are some of the other folks around here that helped you along the way?
Well, of course, Danny Roberts was assistant coach. And as an athlete, you tend to stay close to your people who work with you every day in the gym. But Dr. Pierce was another one who was an excellent teacher, wrote a number of books. Campbell in those days had a lot of outstanding folks. Miss Powell taught English. She was sort of an institution on this campus. I did not have her for a class, but a lot of my classmates did. But even if you didn't have her, you'd see her on campus and you sort of thought you were in her class because she kept up with you. The campus was like it is today, really. It was small enough that you got to know the staff and all the faculty. And it was large enough that you could grow and really do some wonderful things. And I've had, as a result of the experience here on at Campbell, I've literally had a chance in my career to do things that you never think you get to do, you know, in public life.
What do you think when you walk out on campus and you've been here, you know, throughout the years and seen all the changes? What is it like when you sit here and you look around sometimes?
Well, obviously you're proud to know that your alma mater has done well, and that is a credit to the leadership and the people who served on the boards, Dr. Wallace, and you saw the expansion of schools under his leadership, current leadership. It takes resources, but it also takes a vision. The fact that Campbell started a law school, you know, and had the vision to move it to Raleigh, the only state capital in the country, did not have a law school. And all of a sudden, you know, Campbell's footprint keeps growing. And so when you go somewhere and you tell someone you graduated from Campbell University, in my case, Campbell College, they take notice because Campbell has not only a good footprint, but they've done so well. Their law school's done well, the pharmacy school, the medical school, the engineering school, the education school. Originally it was education and folks who wanted to go out and preach. And all of a sudden it's just grown exponentially, and their footprint of alumni are now, I know when I was state superintendent of schools, I'd bump into Campbell alumni, even teachers and principals and superintendents across the state of North Carolina.
The Fighting Campbell Club empowers student athletes to lead with purpose on and off the field. Over the past 3 years, donations to the FCC have helped fund scholarships, facility enhancements, health and wellness improvements, and the greatest needs of the athletics department. With our move to the CAA, the need for your support has never been greater. Memberships begin at just $100 and can get you access to exclusive merchandise and seating. Head to GoCamels.com and hit the Give button.
Our guest on Tales from the Creek is Bob Etheridge, class of 1965, former U.S. Congressman and Campbell Hall of Fame member. Bob, tell us a little bit about how you became involved in public service.
Yeah, I sort of backed into it. I had never planned, Stan, to get involved in public life. When I got out of service, I came here to Campbell. The old gym, went by to visit with Coach McCall because I'd just gotten out of service, and I was getting ready to take a job with a pharmaceutical firm in Tennessee and other places. Coach McCall said, well, you know, Roel Sorensen, who's got a business he started in Anger, he's looking someone. So we met. He offered me a job. That probably made the difference for how I got in public life. So I went to work as general manager of a business in Anger, Sorensen Christian Industries, and worked there for about 18 years. But in the interim during that, I was on my way back from a church meeting one night, and a friend of mine who was a party chairman of the Democratic Party here in Harney County said, you really ought to think about being on the school board. You're always talking about education and how you ought to be doing these things. And I said, nah, not really. I'm too busy at work. I said, besides, schools really need some money. And the school board just spends the money people give them. Well, within 2 weeks, he came back to me again and said, why don't you think about being on the County Board of Commissioners? I said, they're the ones who raised the money. I said, no, I'm too busy. Folks, well, he came back to me a second time. He said, now, you really need to think about this, because a member of the board had gone in the hospital, had a heart attack. There was an opening. Long and short, I went to Sorensen and Lou Christian and said, listen, there's this opportunity. They tell me it only takes a half a day a month. They said, okay, go ahead and do it. Well, that was not really true. It took a lot more than that. Long and short, I ran, I won, served almost 4 years as a county commissioner, and then, of course, you sort of get in the blood of helping. You see how you can really make a difference in public life if you're doing the right thing. And so I ran for the North Carolina General Assembly. Education was the main issue in economic development. I spent 10 years there, chaired the Appropriations Committee for four, introduced major legislation, some of which helped Campbell win their education programs and other stuff. And then our children were getting ready to getting out of elementary school, oldest ones getting ready to go to high school. And several of my friends suggested I ought to run for lieutenant governor. And I said, I don't think so. I got too many friends running for lieutenant governor. Well, long and short, they approached me again and said, why don't you run for superintendent of schools? And I said, well, I'm not an educator. They said, no, we need a businessman. Well, I debated it for a while. Long and short, I did, and I really enjoyed it. I spent 8 years as state superintendent of schools. Funny thing was, I got an endorsement of the teachers and principals before we even announced I would run. And so we got engaged, and we had a good run. We worked hard, worked to make a difference, and I think we had a real impact. And then at the end of those period, I was approached and encouraged to run for Congress. And the rest is history. I spent 14 years in the United States Congress, served on the Ag Committee, Science and Math, Committee. And the last 2 years, I served on the Ways and Means Committee. I was the first North Carolinian to serve on the Ways and Means Committee in about 50 years. So I enjoyed it. We got a chance to travel literally around the world, meet with people in all wakes of walks of life. And in the process, really get some legislation passed that made a difference in people's lives. I guess of the pieces we did a number of pieces of education legislation. I passed a piece of legislation for our fire and rescue and law enforcement folks called the Hometown Heroes Bill to provide a death benefit to our folks. So I had a great opportunity to do that. And then, of course, after Congress, I worked with the governor for a year. And I'm currently still serving as state director for USDA, FSA, for the state of North Carolina. And this is I served 3 years and a half under President Obama, and then President Biden appointed me, and I've been serving now for 3 years in that role here. You know, the wonderful things, and when you sit in Congress, you're sitting with people who are Rhodes Scholars, graduated from, you know, former governors, a long list of folks. And I did, you know, thinking about a kid who went to a little small high school in Johnston County on a small one-horse farm. My parents were tenant farmers. They didn't even own their land. I used to tell the late John Lewis, who used to talk about being a sharecropper, and his parents were in Alabama. I said, John, the only difference between me and you is you were a sharecropper. We were tenant farmers. Not much difference in that. And you were color of our skin's about the only difference, because neither one of us had a hat nor a place to put it when we were growing up. So we've been fortunate. And Faye and I have been blessed. We've had a great opportunity. And, you know, probably if it hadn't been for Camel, I wouldn't have met my wife. So, yeah.
Circle back one thing. You mentioned Sorensen Fristen Industries, and Fred McCall, one of his, you know, everybody knows about the Campbell Basketball School and the history there, but a lot of people didn't realize that that machine sitting over in the corner of your high school gym in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in Van Arn was devised by Coach McCall, the McCall Rebounder, and it was produced by Sorensen Fristen Industries
over here. Yeah, Stan, I traveled the country. That allowed me to go from North Carolina, Andrew, North Carolina, and Bush Creek, all across America. I probably went to every state but about three, doing summer basketball clinics and other stuff. Fred McCall developed that original rebounder. I had the concept. And then Sorensen, who was in public relations here at Campbell, they worked it out. He bought a little old building and a piece of land in Anger that had been a shop. They turned that into a manufacturing business that sold product around the world, and then we devised a new, and, you know, most folks did not know the McCall Rebounder was developed by Fred McCall, the basketball coach at Campbell University. And it's in most gyms in those days, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, 2000 even, they were sold all over America.
I recall in late 70s, Sandy Springs Middle School in Atlanta, where I went, there was a McCall Rebounder in the corner. Ridgeview High School, where I went for a year in Atlanta, a McCall Rebounder.
Of course, yeah.
No, and it wasn't until I got to Campbell and I started thinking, oh my goodness, that's all over the place. My job has been, you know, as in kind of, I could say, in PR for Campbell for years and years and years, but you don't need to PR that thing. You know, that's just truth right there. You don't have to put a spin on it.
I would go to clinics. I remember being in Dallas once doing a clinic, basketball clinic, because you'd have, you know, in the summer more than now, you'd have basketball clinics. Mm-hmm. Coaches would come to hear from, you know, the Bobby Knights or the John Woodens were the key coaches at the time. I remember meeting Mickey Mantle in Dallas at a clinic. I was in Cleveland at a clinic. It must have been in the 80s. Jesse Owens was there speaking, because you'd have people speaking at you. And I think to myself, I should have kicked myself for not getting them to sign stuff and keep it. But you're so enamored by just meeting them that you forget that you're seeing a piece of history walk away, and why didn't you do something at the time? But anyway, yes, and we delivered those. We'd ship them out of Andrew to all over the country. And come the summer when basketball coaches go to class, I'd start in Greensboro to Mississippi to Florida to Texas, Kansas, Kentucky, North Dakota, South Dakota, just around the country doing summer clinics.
So moving back around here, tell us a little bit about what you do as the FSA State Executive Director for North Carolina. What's your regular responsibility?
We have, Stan, we have about 300 and, any given day, 310 to 15 people. The reason I say that, you know, people leave, people retire. It takes a while to hire folks. We are the U.S. Department of Agriculture's arm to reach out to our farmers in rural America. In the area that I have, Farm Service Agency, we deal directly with farmers or people who grow food and fiber. You can have a farm number and grow food and fiber if you got a place that's 10 by 10 in town, and get a farm number and do it. We insure it. We have farm loans for people that if they want to buy land or buy a farm. We can't loan you money to buy a house unless there's a house on that farm. When you buy the farm, the house is on it. We carry the insurance, crop insurance for farmers through what's called a non-insurable NAP. But we have a sister agency that called RMA that's a reinsurance area that insures corn, soybeans, cotton, tobacco. It is a big agency with a huge budget, with a lot of people that folks don't really see all the time. But if it were not there, our Food and Fiber would really be in trouble. Because U.S. Department of Education, as Secretary Vilsack likes to say, is the people's agency. It includes not just our portion. It includes what's called rural development. It loans money for Campbell University's borrowed money through rural development for dorms and stuff. You can build a town. You can build a home. NRCS, which is the natural resources side of USDA, helps maintain our soils, our forests and others, and we can literally reseed and help rebuild. And then RMA, which is a pit portion for reinsurance of foods and vegetables. And then you've got our school lunch programs. Foods come under USDA. APHIS, which takes care of all the diseases and inspections and all that, comes under it. Your foreign agricultural service is under USDA, dealing with the foods and stuff that come in and out, trade. So it is a huge agency. I've had an opportunity that very few people have ever had to do the things that I've had a chance to do. And of all the things I've done outside being superintendent of schools, I think that was just a great one because you're changing the future. USDA is it, because you really touch people's lives every day and you don't realize how important what we do at USDA is until the trucks don't move or the dock strike that almost took place. Well, it took place for what, 4 or 5 days? And I was listening to yesterday, and they were talking about the bananas. You know, people that don't realize that just a thing like bananas, I mean, oranges, you go down the list, they can stay in those refrigerated containers only so long, and then they go bad. They got to be unloaded and get to the grocery shelf. So it's little things like that. So USDA it touches our lives every single day, and we take for granted when we walk in that grocery store. Number one, if it's stamped USDA, it's safe to eat and use.
It sounds like a Herculean undertaking under the best circumstances, but as we have seen here in the last week, in late September, when nature really troubles folks and changes their lives, and some of them lose their lives. How does your job or your responsibilities and things like that, how does that change when these catastrophic events take place?
Well, you know, for the average person, and I consider myself one of those average people, we don't think about government. We just expect it's going to work. You know, government's sort of over there. But all of a sudden, when you have a major catastrophe, it's almost biblical, like what we've had here in North Carolina over the last few weeks, something we've never seen before in the western part of the state, then all federal agencies spring into action. FEMA, which comes in to help to the extent, and I don't think anyone thought it, would be as bad as it is. The food banks that are set up, that's federal food flowing into that. Now, a lot of folks are sending a lot of other things, but without FEMA and without the state of North Carolina emergency management, all these people start to work together to make it happen. And then the recovery is going to follow that. And we are part of the recovery piece in USDA for farmers, land, buildings, equipment that got washed away, animals that you lose. We can't fix the houses. That's not part of us. But their buildings, equipment, and other things. Stan, I got a call yesterday, and it was reinforced this morning. There's a small dairy up in the West Part. It just got destroyed. Now, they kept the cows, but if you have a dairy, those cows have to be milked twice a day. If all your equipment's gone, what do you do with those cows? You don't have enough people to milk them. You don't have your equipment. So the farmers had to sell their stock. Now, they'll have to come back and restock at some point. Hopefully, they'll go back in business because we can't keep losing farmers. But when we do, then all of us through USDA will be through programs, help them. We won't give them money, but we'll have them loan money at low interest rates to get back in business if they want to. That's part of what we do.
I know you've probably been asked this question. It sounds like you're awful busy for someone who's in his early 80s. Have the plans to retire? Or, when you have some free time, it doesn't sound like you got a lot. How do you like to spend your free time?
I really like to go out on the farm. I still have, Faye and I have been very blessed. She grew up on a farm here in Harnett County, and her parents own one. So we have part of that. She inherited. We bought some partials of land from her aunt and from her cousin that we have adjacent to home place. So I go out there. I've got a few cows, just enough to say I farm. I don't have a lot, and not enough to make a living. But I enjoy doing that. I used to play golf, but I don't play much golf anymore. Gosh, it takes so much time for me to do that. I really enjoy going out on the farm, and I participate in a number of civic activities. I've always believed that as long as you stay busy, you stay healthy. And we've been blessed. Both Faye and I have to have three children that have done well, and we try to spend our time being involved with our church or with our community, doing things and staying active. So we've been blessed to have good health, and that's a lot of folks don't have that. I think that, as much as anything else, allows me to do a lot of things I enjoy doing and helping others.
In an earlier conversation with me, that you have a grandson who's starting to play basketball down at Emory University in Atlanta. How is that to see that generational talent?
Well, we're very pleased. William is an outstanding athlete. He's far better ball player than I was. He is a freshman at Emory this fall, and we'll be playing for him. And his brother will be going to Texas this weekend, one of 10 kids, I think, across America at Baylor. He's a sophomore. No, he's a junior at Broughton. And he is the junior organist at Eden Street, and he's been going down there on an organ trip. And all of we're just fortunate to have grandchildren who have done well, just like their children, mother and father. And I tell folks they took after their grandmother. That always helps.
You still play any hoops, Bob?
I do. We have a group that normally gets together on Tuesday nights. We haven't played for a couple of weeks we were going to play this past week, but the church where we play, they were using the gym to collect materials to take up to the mountains, so we weren't able. But we usually go up on Tuesday nights and play an hour or so.
And another historic occurrence that happened during your time at Campbell was on Leap Day 1964 over at Carter Gym, the longest basketball game in history, 13 overtimes between Andrew and Boone Trail. Were you one of the 1,500 or so people who packed the gym?
That was when that stand was when Harnett County, Carter Gym was the biggest gym in the county. That's hard to believe today. And two of those players, I believe, that played on that team, ultimately came to Campbell. That was remarkable. That was a remarkable leap. And a couple of times, neither team scored. They held the ball. That's when you could just hold the ball.
On an interview here not too long ago, and And a lot of people can't imagine 13 overtimes. Now, there were 3-minute overtime periods in the high school games, 32 minutes. And Frank said he never thought about being tired. He said, you just, you know, you were young, it didn't matter.
Just kept going.
Back in 2002, you were inducted into the Campbell Athletics Hall of Fame. What is that honor and some of the other honors you've received over the years?
Well, obviously, to be honored by your alma mater is always special. But I said to him the night I was inducted, and I mean this sincerely, I said, you know, golly, must have been a slim year this year that I wound up getting hiking in the Hall of Fame, and everybody laughed. But I think it is, and I know there are a lot of people who have played, who even probably played when I did, were as good or better athletes, but no one that I ever played with worked any harder at it or gave any quarters. Because number one, you know, when I came here, I didn't have a scholarship, and I knew if I didn't work hard and really go the extra mile, you know, I could pretty easily. Now, I don't know that anyone lost their scholarship while I was here, but I always figured I could. So I knew I had to go the extra because I was the first in my family to get a college degree, and it meant a lot to me.
Finally, Bob, can you put into words what Campbell University and the Boyd's Creek community, how they have impacted your life?
Golly, Stan. For a kid who came off of a one-horse farm down in Johnston County, you know, I hadn't been very far from anywhere out of the state when I came to Campbell, because when I walked on, I'd been to one other college campus. My ag teacher had taken me to Red Springs when then Flo McDonald was operating. And he had wanted me to come to school because he really thought I had some skills in basketball. But it took me a couple of years out of high school, and I played in the Raleigh City League, incidentally, and on the all-star team there. I think that helped me increase my skills so that I would be able to get here. But the fact that I came here and Coach McCall had enough faith in me to give me a scholarship, and then number two, that they allowed me to stay and get a degree, made all the difference in the world. And it's changed my life. And, you know, that's what education's about. Not only to change your life, it changes the next generation. And that's what it did for me.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been Bob Etheridge.
Stan, thank you for letting me join you.